The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church in the world. And we look at what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic values. And I would say highlighting those values is the dignity of the human person, compassion, and justice. Now, there are more values, but those are the things that we kind of highlight. Those are the things that we kind of look at what's going on in the world through that perspective. And certainly as we kind of are beginning fall, this has not been a time when the glass, in my judgment, has been half full. There's a lot of emptiness in the world today, and I mean, we are reeling from the violent attack, senseless attack in Las Vegas, in which more than 50 people were killed, 500 or so were wounded, just in seemingly a senseless, premeditated act of violence and evil and destruction. And so we're reeling from that. And then we are dealing with the natural disasters that have kind of come in just such rapid order in the past few weeks, a month, whether they be in the Gulf Coast, whether they be in Mexico, whether they be in Florida. And today we're going to spend most of our show speaking about the incredible tragedy that has kind of afflicted the island of Puerto Rico with Hurricane Maria. So it's a particularly difficult situation there. And, you know, while our sympathy goes out to people who are trying to recover from all of those disasters, in a particular way, the island of Puerto Rico, it warrants special attention just given the extent of the devastation that was there. So today we're going to be speaking with two people who can shed some light on that. One more immediate, the other a little bit long term. Later on in our show, we're going to speak with Professor Edwin Melendez, who is at Hunter College, and he's the director of Center of Puerto Rican Studies there. And we're going to speak with him about some of the broader issues related to Puerto Rico. But our first guest, who I'm delighted is with us on the phone, is Assemblyman Marcos Crespo from the 85th Assembly District in the Bronx. He himself was born in Guayama, Puerto Rico. And, you know, I'm very, very happy to consider Marcos a friend, a colleague, somebody who it is always a very, very productive time to work with on behalf of the common good of all of New Yorkers. And I really am delighted in the midst of this incredibly sad, tragic, and very busy time that Assemblyman Crespo has given us a few minutes here on Just Love. Assemblyman Crespo, thank you for joining us this afternoon on Just Love.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's a pleasure to talk to you, as always, and to share whatever insights I can with your listeners about, as you rightfully described, has been a tragedy, really, in the Caribbean and Puerto Rico and some of the other islands as well.
So let me first ask, Marco, first and foremost, do you have family who are still living there?
Yeah, my mother, my grandmother, my uncles, most of my family on my mother's side lives in Puerto Rico. My brother had actually recently moved to Texas. Luckily, he was further north from where Harvey hit Houston, so he wasn't impacted as directly. I have my dad and my family in Florida. They were hunkered down with Irma. But unfortunately, my mother and the rest of my family lives in Arroyo, a town in the southeast end of the island, very close to Yabucoa, where the storm entered the island of Puerto Rico.
So tell me again, how are your relatives, your mom and others in Puerto Rico? How are they doing?
Well, it took almost a week, a little over a week, actually, for me to be able to contact her. It was nerve-wracking those first few days, not knowing what was going on and not having communications and not getting feedback through any of the authorities about the conditions in certain neighborhoods and communities and towns. But I spoke to her a few days back, a couple of days back. A friend of hers was able to get cell service, and we communicated. And so the initial concern about the impact of the storm directly was that she's okay from that. But the aftermath is what continues to concern so many families, who many of whom are still not connected with their loved ones. But it's also the nerves of knowing whether their family have food, whether they have running water. You know, obviously we know that they don't have electricity, but are they at least eating and sheltered? And these things are of great concern. My mom had her generator damage, so that's not in working order. And when she did contact me, she said she was running short on those supplies and was struggling to get clarity on where she can get access to that. Keep in mind, many of these families were struggling economically, so they may not have access to cash. And even those who have a job or a bank account don't have access to their local banks to withdraw cash and then just make purchases. So they're all in a very surreal state right now. Something out of a movie is what she described, and a concerning situation.
So we're speaking with Assemblyman Marco Crespo, who represents the 85th District in the Bronx. We're just talking to him about the fact his mom is in Puerto Rico, and it took long to just be able to speak with her and know that she's okay. And that's the situation for so many family members who just, there's no communication. Did I hear correct that, you know, maybe only like 1 in 7 of the cell towers in Puerto Rico, even now, a couple weeks after the disaster, are up and running?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number of towers, but I do know that only a small percentage of the island has cell service, and even that has been spotty. One company in particular, Claro, was anybody who had a Claro phone was more likely to get signal. That's how she's been able to communicate. The vast majority of folks have other companies, and some of the larger companies, and they have not. They're still not operational. So there is a continuous issue with access to communication systems. Just yesterday, as somebody lent my mother a phone, and I've been getting a number of tweets from families asking to help connect with their loved ones, just so happens one of those messages was from a family in my town, and my mother was actually able to check in on them. And I was able to three-way conversation the individual who reached out to me and get them news about their loved one, even though it was through a second party, in this case my mother. And so even in their worst situation, families are looking out for each other and are willing to share their limited resources to help each other through this time.
You know, Marco, our show is nationwide. It goes throughout the country. But maybe you could share with our listeners a little bit the really special connection there is between New York and Puerto Rico. Talk a little bit about that, because, you know, we all felt bad about Harvey. We felt bad about the hurricane. I'm sorry, the earthquake in Mexico. We felt bad about Florida. But my experience being in New York, Puerto Rico just gripped everybody in a way that those others didn't. Can you kind of share with our listeners, maybe some throughout the country, about that special relationship between New York and Puerto Rico?
Sure. I mean, I guess the important thing is for people to have in context, first and foremost, the social political status of Puerto Rico as a territory for the last 100 years of the United States. We're a commonwealth. We have all the responsibilities and rights afforded to U.S. citizens. And mandates with that. So federal mandates all apply to Puerto Rico the same way. Nonetheless, we are American citizens but do not have voting power in the general election for president. We do not have a voting representative in Congress. And there are a number of policy issues that really limit the ability of the Puerto Rican community, despite being American citizens. There is a longstanding sentiment that we have been treated as something more like a second-class citizenry without access to resources or representation. And that's an important context. And over the years, Puerto Rico's history has been one, a very difficult one, where there's been a number of interventions and foreign powers who have taken over control of the island and influence. Since the United States has had a relationship with Puerto Rico, we have seen waves of migration out of the island. And during the 40s and 50s in particular, there was a largest migration of people leaving the island of Puerto Rico, many of them unskilled, uneducated workers and families who sought opportunities elsewhere. And the vast majority of them, many of them, ended up here in New York. And New York City became the epicenter of that growing diaspora. And so we've been a large part, the Puerto Rican community has been a large part of the story of New York City and the growth of the city of New York as a mecca of diversity. And so many generations of families have now grown here and done well over the years and have since moved and now migrated to other parts of the continental United States. But New York City has been, in particular, the epicenter, and communities like the Bronx, which I represent, and East Harlem were that mecca, were home base for that migration and that in those communities to come in. And it wasn't an easy transition for them. Many of them were challenged with language barriers and discrimination and a number of other impacts that that were very difficult for the community to sort of get past and grow from. But nonetheless, they've done that over the years. So New York has a significant population of Latinos and particularly Puerto Ricans. Now that number has grown exponentially in places like Florida and Texas and other smaller states around the southeast end of the United States that have seen the new wave. Many of the in the recent years, the outpouring of folks leaving Puerto Rico because of its economic crisis and lack of jobs and opportunities. And so they have now sought opportunities here in the U.S. And so that there's a new wave that is going to be expected given this concern, this tragedy, where folks who are just forced into displacement because they've lost it all, they've lost their homes, or, you know, what was left of their economy might be gone completely. And so we expect a whole new wave of folks coming to the U.S. seeking support. Many of them will come to New York as well.
Marco, thank you for that little bit of history. Let's go back to Puerto Rico. You actually went down to the island like a day or so after the storm, I believe. Didn't you go?
Yeah, so the storm hit on Wednesday, and on Friday morning, thanks to the leadership of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the personnel from the Power Authority and a few and the National Guard, I was able to join him and Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez on that first relief flight into Puerto Rico. That Friday was the first plane that arrived in Puerto Rico with supplies and emergency resources, as well as personnel from the Power Authority that was going to remain in Puerto Rico helping to try to reestablish the grid. It's important for people to know that as of today, 2 weeks after the storm, almost 90% of the island, 95% of the island is still without power. And so there are tremendous challenges still affecting the community, but I was able to be on the ground on Friday soon after the storm hit and see the devastation firsthand. It was a very difficult thing to see the magnitude of the impact of this storm, to see communities completely flooded. We saw families in kayaks checking in on other neighbors, kayaking through their neighborhood. We saw power lines down. We saw trees down. We saw infrastructure interrupted. And that was just the capital region where there's a greater access to supplies and resources than some of the more rural areas of the island, which is the majority of the island. And so it was very difficult to be so close yet so far from my own family, who's in the southeast end of the island. And so it was important on a lot of levels in an emotional way and also in terms of being on the ground as New Yorkers, speaking to that history and being the first to want to respond. And it was only possible because of the leadership of our governor who pulled all strings and resources to get us there. And it was important to send a message of solidarity, to bring emergency supplies, but also as a Latino and a Puerto Rican to be there and to see firsthand and to feel like understand fully the magnitude of this and the response that had to match that magnitude and monumental effort on the ground to help Puerto Rico now more than ever.
So, Marco, part of what we've been through a number of disasters. We in New York, we were through September 11th, which was one type of disaster, tragedy, attack. And then there was Superstorm Sandy, which fortunately didn't do much damage in the Bronx, but it did a tremendous amount of damage in New Jersey, in Staten Island, in Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island. One of the things we kind of knew from that is that you have the immediate response where you want to make sure that people are as safe as they can be, that they get the basic necessities, that people don't die, whether it be from lack of hospitals or medical care. But then there's the long-term recovery that is going on for years and years and years. But one of the things that's that sometimes that we've oftentimes said in disasters in other places, it's hard to get things to people. And so even though it may sound a little bit harsh, people say, well, you know, don't send things, don't collect things, even though they need things. Money is easy because it's easy to deal with that with people. But what I've noticed in this particular disaster, that a lot of people are collecting things, basic necessities, canned food, batteries, diapers, things of that nature. Is that going to be able to get to the people in Puerto Rico?
It is. There's been a lot of reporting on the challenges on the ground in terms of a proper distribution, but it is important to collect those goods specifically, because you got to understand that without a communication system's up and running, without the energy system gone, right now there's no grid, there's no electricity, everything is running on generators, and without running water in many communities, it is impossible even for the businesses. So if you get cash into the hands of families, many of them don't have access to working stores and working supermarkets, and everything is being rationed. And so while this is going to require a long-term relief plan and a long-term investment in rebuilding Puerto Rico in the immediacy, families need to get access to goods that keep them sustained, whether it's all the items you mentioned, flashlights, they don't have, you know, the few generators, food that is non-perishable, that they don't have to run an electric stove or something else to operate, to cook. Just those basic necessities really do become crucial because they don't have a working infrastructure. So, you know, stores can't stock up on meat because they can't run the refrigeration, and so on and so on. And so even, you know, my mother, when I did speak to her, she works for the local municipality. The city hall there gave her her paycheck, but there's no working bank for her to cash it. And even if she travels to another town that may have a working bank that's operating on a generator, they're rationing how much they'll pay out per check. And so it's not the only answer right now is to get cash in hands to families or sending monetary contributions. That's going to be important for the rebuild. But right now, families just need resources to get by.
And are things getting there? I know in New York City, I think firehouses were places where people could drop stuff off. Are there flights going to Puerto Rico at the moment?
Yes. In terms of the distribution, there have been consistent flights. There have been ships also now sent with containers of supplies. And we're very proud of the response that we have received. I'm the co-chair of the statewide relief effort that Governor Cuomo launched. Last Friday, we had a major drive here in the Bronx where we expected to fill 3 shipping containers in one afternoon, except the overwhelming response forced us to do 8 shipping containers. Plus, we filled out a local warehouse with additional materials that were brought in late. I didn't leave the site. We were there from 9 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the morning while the National Guard did the last trip. And we still had to get a state trooper to stay with the additional pallets that remained to be picked up the next morning. That was the overwhelming volume of response. And it was also a lesson because not only did we collect all those goods that are now on their way to Puerto Rico, but more importantly, we gave an outlet to so many families who felt the need to come together, to feel that they were part of an effort that responded to the needs of their loved ones on the island. And it was an emotionally necessary outlet for so many families. We're certainly grateful for all of the prayers. We're certainly grateful for all. And by the way, that effort was in conjunction with the New York Hispanic Clergy Organization. So many of our churches were in the lead on that initiative. And, you know, the community there's been an outpouring of support with thoughts and prayers. But I think our faith calls us to act as well and to put into action the things that and the lessons that we know our Lord and Savior has instructed us, whether it's helping somebody who's homeless, whether it's feeding somebody who's hungry. Right now, there are people in Puerto Rico, 3.5 million American citizens, many of whom lost their homes, don't have a roof, don't have food, don't have running water, and can't get by. And so I think we have to make sure that we continue our efforts. There's a lot of ways, local efforts that you can donate to certain drives. There will be a time where monetary donations are going to be necessary to fund the rebuild effort to make sure that people can get their homes rebuilt in a resilient way for future storms. But it's also important to put this in the context of the advocacy that we need all Americans to really be a part of, and that is that that no American citizens, whether they live in a state or in a territory, should feel that they're being treated differently. And Puerto Rico's challenges, for many of us, this is a big I told you so moment. We've been talking about those policy issues that get in the way of Puerto Rico being able to sustain itself and to grow and to make the proper investments to defend itself and be prepared for storms like this. They're in the Caribbean. They're in the path of these storms on a seasonal basis. And yet, we know that climate change is real, that something's happening in our planet, that these things are happening more frequently and in greater force. And so in order to prepare for that, Puerto Rico really needs people to advocate for attention to its needs, to make sure that we are not shortchanged when it comes to Medicaid and Medicare funding, to make sure that we are not left out of block grants for energy investments and resiliency, and that many of the other economic issues that have been affecting the island, that the federal government now respond with an aid package that really allows us to rebuild without strings attached and recreate an economy so these families aren't permanently displaced, but that they can sooner rather than later go back home to a rebuilt community that is prepared for the future storms.
Marco, thank you. Before I let you go, so I hear what you're saying about the advocacy. There's a long-term issue that we need people to stay involved, but there still is the immediate need. So can you give people either a place, a website or something, if they still have things they want to donate? Because I assume that this is an ongoing effort. It's not just the 8 cartons last week. There's still need for more stuff.
Yeah, mindful that many of your listeners are throughout the country, but right. In New York State, they can go to ny.gov/Puerto Rico, and that's the New York State relief effort. There are locations throughout the state that have been designated to accept a very specific list of donations that are necessary, of the goods that are necessary. On that website, you can also learn about institutions that have started relief funds that have been vetted and are familiar to all of us that are going to need support. Some of those are New York-based that are doing efforts, but also there's a listing of Puerto Rico-based organizations that could also accept donations that are going to need those resources in order to rebuild. I also recommend people to look for the Center for Puerto Rican Studies, and I heard in your intro you're going to be talking to Professor Edwin Melendez. Yeah. They have also created a website that educates anyone who's interested about the many Puerto Rico-based organizations that are doing great work on the ground, helping families, feeding families, and helping communities rebuild. And so we encourage families of anyone who wants to be helpful to check out those websites. But also, no matter where you live in the United States, if you can call your congressman, if you can call your senators and say, this might not be a pressing issue for us here now, but what are you doing for Puerto Rico? And are you advocating for them to get what they need and to help those families who are suffering? And that can go a long way, more so than some of the money that you can donate now. That call can make a difference in making sure that the federal government does everything it can to respond to the needs of the island and the 3.5 million American citizens who live there.
Marco, thank you so much for not only spending time with us, but thank you for the effort that you're making. Thank you for co-chairing the New York State Puerto Rican relief effort. And thanks what you do kind of all the time on behalf of your constituents to make our world more just and more compassionate. Thanks for your time, Assemblyman Marco Crespo. Thanks for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you, Mr. Senior. God bless you. And to all your listeners, God be with you. And I appreciate the many prayers and the support that your listeners and the parishes around the country have extended to families in need all over in Vegas, in Mexico, in Puerto Rico, the rest of the Virgin Islands. There are so many communities suffering, and but we are called by faith to act. And I think every step we take in that effort goes a long way. So God bless you, and thank you for this opportunity to speak about this.
Thank you so much. That was Assemblyman Marco Crespo, represents the 85th District in the Bronx. This is Just Love. We talk about what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic values, and the values that are at the core of that are compassion, justice, the dignity, the sanctity of the human person. And in these days when all of these disasters are hitting, some of them man-made and some of them natural, we really need to focus on those values, the dignity of the human person, compassion for our fellow human beings, trying to create a society that is just. So we're going to take a break now. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Sé lo que son los encantos de mi Borinquen hermosa, porque sola quiero yo tanto.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. We talk about those things that are very current, and we talk about them through the lens of our Catholic values. Namely, the value of dignity of the human person, the sanctity of life. We talk about compassion and we talk about justice, a society and a world in which should briefly reflect those. And as we kind of gather, as we talk this week, there's a lot going on in the world that is not helpful to the dignity of the human person, nor respectful of it. There is a lot where a lot of life has been destroyed in the tragic shootings out in Las Vegas. And there's been a lot of natural disasters that require a tremendous amount of compassion. And at some point, maybe we look at, were there things going on before those disasters that maybe kind of we should have been looking at that would have mitigated some of the damage of those disasters. So we just had a good conversation with Assemblyman Marco Crespo, who's been doing so much to try to organize relief efforts between Puerto Rico and from New York and Puerto Rico. And as Marco said, and for our listeners throughout the country, one of the reasons there's such a strong feeling between New York and Puerto Rico, because when there was migration from Puerto Rico 40, 50, 60 years ago, a lot of that came to New York. So that was a place where a lot of Puerto Rican families moved from the island to New York. And so there is that really, really strong connection between New York and Puerto Rico. Now, New York is much more diverse in terms of the Latino and Latina cultures and communities that now make New York their home, but if you go back 50, 60 years or so, the strongest by far presence of Latinos in New York was from the island of Puerto Rico. And that just makes the kind of relationship, the feelings, the emotions, the bonds so much tighter, even though we do consider the earthquakes in Mexico, the tragedy of the Hurricane Harvey in Houston and in Florida. Those are awful, and the support that New Yorkers are giving to those recovery efforts also. But there is kind of a special place in the heart of New Yorkers for Puerto Rico, given the ties between the island and New York. And one of the things I want to talk about is just this morning, I was on the phone with Father Henrique, who is the director of Caritas in Puerto Rico. And, you know, he is kind of has been staying a lot in a community with where his mother is because that's safer. There's more power in that community than there is in other places. And we're speaking with him about some of the things they're trying to do to restore there, some of the work they're trying to do with FEMA to get the goods that are there. And one of the reasons we did that is because we have developed a relationship with Caritas of Puerto Rico. And the past couple of years, we've gone down there as part of a meeting of New York legislatures. And we've done some volunteer projects with Caritas of Puerto Rico. So we've developed a relationship with them. And so when this disaster hit, we reached out and, you know, we're looking at various ways we can do that. You know, so we are, some people have been generous and given us some contributions. So we're going to, you know, send some of them to Caritas of Puerto Rico. The other thing, again, just to show the strong ties between New York and the island, one of our major New York charitable agencies, the New York Foundling, which has programs throughout the New York area, well, they have about 40 different Head Start sites throughout the island of Puerto Rico. And they have that for an interesting reason, because as I mentioned, the families came to New York. Some of them moved back to Puerto Rico and they said, you know, we feel so good about the services the New York Foundling has been providing to us in New York, but our children need Head Start there. What about opening some sites there? So they now have about 40 different Head Start sites in different places. So we reached out to that Catholic Charities affiliated agency in New York, and we're providing some support to them because their families are just in such difficult situations that's there. The other thing I mentioned that we work with Catholic and non-Catholic groups, Catholic Charities. So we worked with the Association of Chambers of Commerce, Latino Chambers of Commerce. We're working with the National Supermarket Association. We're working with Comité Noviembre, a group of that's put together a relief effort called I'm with Puerto Rico, Estoy con Puerto Rico. And because of some of our infrastructure, Catholic Charities in New York, we've agreed to kind of be the conduit for processing the donations that they receive and that they're going to designate to some of those charities in Puerto Rico. So even though we're Catholic Charities is in New York, we have a strong ties to the island and we're doing things that are there. Now, I have to mention that, you know, National Catholic Charities USA oversees all of our responses to disasters. And I believe Catholic Charities USA has made a commitment of at least $1 million to the relief efforts in Puerto Rico. So there's a lot that is going on immediately. It's a very difficult situation. We in New York know how difficult floods are in water because of what happened in Superstorm Sandy. But, you know, it's hard to communicate the fact that even though Superstorm Sandy was so devastating, you know, if you moved a few miles in off the coast, it was dry. And so you had a whole community that, you know, had resources, they could respond. The people whose houses were devastated, but there was a whole still thriving kind of community in New York and New Jersey that could kind of be part of the recovery efforts. Puerto Rico, it's the whole island that is there. And I think it's it's impossible, I think, for those of us who are so energy dependent to realize that 95% of the island still is without power. Some 2 weeks later, again, fortunately, because of the uncertainty of power, there are probably more generators in Puerto Rico than there are in other parts of the United States. But then the issue is, do you get gas to the generators? And so it's an ongoing issue. So anyway, I'm going to take a break again. And when I come back, we're going to speak with Professor Edwin Melendez, who is at Hunter College, the Center for Puerto Rican Studies. And we're going to speak about, some of the issues with relate to Puerto Rico. And we're going to speak about some of the recovery efforts and what's needed maybe a little bit long term. This is Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This week, we're dealing with a lot of injustice, a lot of lack of compassion, a lot of situations in which the dignity of the human person has been tremendously hurt and compromised. I'm speaking specifically about the tragic, the senseless shooting of more than 50 people, shooting and killing of more than 50 people, wounding of another 500 in Las Vegas by a man who seemingly, as of this point, nobody knows why he did those awful acts. And so it's a little bit of a very sad, it's a tragic time. And then we're dealing with all of the natural disasters, whether it be Mexico, whether it be Houston and the rest of the Gulf Coast, whether it be Florida. And what we're focusing on today is primarily Puerto Rico and the devastating impact that Hurricane Maria had on that island. And now, 2 weeks or so later, it is still in the point of view of still needing to make sure that the basic necessities are there. And I'm delighted that we're having that Professor Edwin Melendez is with us. He is a professor of urban affairs, and he's the director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter College. Professor Melendez, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you know, so let me get very specific because, you know, it's now a couple weeks after the storm hit. And in most situations, the first efforts, you know, make sure everybody's safe and finding out who tragically may have died and things like that, maybe 2 days.
Right.
But we're not there in Puerto Rico. There's still, I mean, I think even in the past day, we discovered, you know, tragically another 10 people or so who died.
Yeah. We're still not out of the woods, for sure. If you look at the situation there, the urban areas where the more, you know, upper middle class live, gated communities and so forth, are doing okay because the housing was, you know, sturdy and there were no flooding and so forth. But still, the rivers are still high. The most of the flooding in the very low areas subside a little bit, but the rivers are still strong. A lot of water, a lot of saturation in the water. So that means that, you know, because of the contamination of the waters with sewage and other, you know, dead animals and that kind of stuff. So there's still a great risk in terms of public health. But more importantly, when you go up in the hills, right, and where a good significant portion of the Puerto Rican population lives, bridges are destroyed. These people are cut off from aid. They're being receiving, from helicopters help, but the distribution within those areas is still lacking. So there's a lot to be done. I think putting, the military in charge of the logistics of this is a great improvement. In my opinion, it should have been done much earlier than that. But we are where we are. Now, we're still at that triage stage where we need to save life and make sure that support is spread across the island because it's very uneven right now. There are some communities that are completely isolated. They don't have communications. You know, the cell phones are 95% down. Electricity is 100% down except for, you know, a few spots here and there. So all the hospitals and medical facilities are running on generators. The water supply is getting better, but it's still a challenge. There are still lines on gasoline, diesel purchases. So it's still we're still in that phase of immediate assistance and relief. And, and very soon after that is taken care of, we have to start thinking about rebuilding Puerto Rico. What do we do next?
So it's still, as we would say here in the United States, still the tap water is not good to drink?
Yeah, I think it's up to about 50% of the households with running water, potable water. But that's a health problem because if you don't have water for the toilets, you have a problem, right? If you don't have potable water, my own family, my son is going to a creek to get water for drinking water. He still have a little bit reserved on the tank for other uses, but it's a struggle. So you have to do line for this, line for that. The cash machines are not always working. The supermarkets don't have refrigeration. So you can imagine, it's like a big war.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, those of us who live in an urban area like New York City, and most of our listeners throughout the country live in an area which we just assume you go to the wall, you turn on the switch, and the electricity comes on. It seems to me almost incomprehensible that like 95% of the power grid and electricity isn't working. That's phenomenal.
And it's complicated by the fact that the roads are not completely ready. I mean, some of them have been cleaned up, but if the bridge collapses, I mean, you need the Army Corps of Engineers, someone that's going to do temporary. There are people crossing big rivers with ropes and stuff. It's very dangerous still out there.
And the population of the island is about 3.5 million. Is that what it is?
3.4. And I will say that there is a big outflow of people right now, and out migration is going to be very significant moving forward.
Now, Professor, we're speaking with Professor Melendez, who is the director of the Puerto Rican Center at Hunter College. Now, again, I think everybody has kind of talked about the fact that the economy in Puerto Rico prior to this was in very, very bad shape. And in fact, at least I had been hearing that, you know, maybe the past 4 or 5 years, even before this, there was out-migration.
Right,
and,
right,
I mean, at
right.
least what I heard, and so you either confirm or correct this, that, you know, maybe 100,000 people or more went to the Florida area, maybe Tampa.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, part of the reality of the economic crisis in Puerto Rico is that Puerto Rico has lost about 10% of the population over the last decade. Would that translate over the last 3 years, for example, on an average net migration of over 60,000 people, right? Obviously,
every year, right?
But so if you project that, you should expect at least 2 or 3 times, because the economy is all broken down.
Right.
It's going to be a while before commerce start back online because of the electricity and the supplies and all of that thing. So unemployment is going to increase. That means that migration is going to increase. And you saw in the airport chaotic situation where people trying to leave. You saw the cruise ships, long lines of people. These were families with young children. They were trying to accommodate the elderly, but these are the middle classes in urban areas, remember, because those are the ones that could get to the airport or the cruise line. So we should expect, as roads are restored, a lot of our families here are apprehensive of what are the situations for them. And then when people don't have jobs, the first inclination is to migrate, because they need to support their families and what have you. So that's a big challenge coming up. Now, from our perspective here, you know, stateside, we need to accommodate this family. They're not refugees. They're American citizens that come to be with their families. But once they get here, you know, they need to transfer schools to their senior people with medical needs, whether dialysis, insulin, or high blood pressure. You know, there are all kind of demands that this new population is going to put upon our community base and our agencies here in New York and in Florida. More importantly, these people over time are going to need housing and jobs and so forth. So we need to have an infrastructure ready to welcome these American citizens that are now in need. And more importantly, as we rebuild Puerto Rico, we got to pay attention how we bring this population back. Because if we don't repopulate Puerto Rico, getting out of the economic crisis that we were going through is going to be even more difficult. The less population you have, the weaker your economy.
You know, Professor Melendez, who is the director of the Center for Puerto Rican Studies at Hunter University in New York City, one of the things that I always kind of keep in mind, and it's a little bit frustrating.
Right.
And here's the frustrating part for me is that after a disaster, you never know.
Right.
You know, and I love speaking with kind of people like you who do writing and thinking, and I say, boy, I wish I had. I think that's a good point. And then there's always, I know one big academic word.
Right, right.
And
right.
then what happens is an exogenous variable comes
right,
in.
Right.
And all of the planning,
right,
all of right. the logarithms,
right,
all
right.
of the regression analysis.
Right, right, right.
But we didn't count on that.
Yeah, right,
so we got to do as much planning as we can.
Right, right.
And then be prepared to be surprised when
right.
something
right.
different happens.
Yeah, and one of those surprises is the amount of people that may come to New York.
Right.
Because remember, New York and Florida are the two states with more than 1 million Puerto Ricans.
Right.
And people migrate based on the information that they have and the resources that they have. So their families can welcome them. And so these are the two regions, you know, New York and Florida, that are most likely to receive the influx of migrants from the island.
Right.
The recent, you know, the and moving forward. And so if we estimate that, you know, it's going to be 2 and two or three times the level that we had, and there's not going to be net because nobody's going back.
Right.
Right. Then we should expect anything between 120,000 to 200,000 people leaving the island in a short period of time.
Right.
That's more than 5% of the population. Okay. So it's a real that will be an unintended consequence of whatever we do in terms of support Puerto Rico to rebuild their economy and the country.
So let me ask you this question, and this is my own listeners. I'm just curious about this.
Right.
You
okay.
may not, but I'm curious. You know, when they talk about it, prior to this, the out-migration from Puerto Rico, they almost said that I got the impression that almost all of it went to Florida and Tampa.
Right.
Given the large-scale Puerto Rican community in New York, how come? Was it too cold?
No, there was always migration to New York. But New York, you have to think about New York as a revolving door, revolving door, right? And more importantly, New York, whether you look at the city or the state, is not the region. So there are Puerto Ricans in Connecticut, especially, close to New York, and Long Island, and New Jersey, and even if you stretch it to Philadelphia, that's where you have the bulk of the Puerto Rican population in the U.S., over 2 million, of the 5.5 million total.
Right.
So when you look at that distribution, New York is like a port of entry, and then we go to the suburbs, and we sort ourselves out based on income and needs and conditions and so forth. But we have a large people going to large contingent to all these suburban areas surrounding New York. So whether we have seen a little bit of growth in New York, but the reality is that it's just people coming in and other people moving out. So the level stays a little steady, but don't be confused about the road to New York. New York, I grew up in Puerto Rico, and New York was always, until I was in my mid-20s, New York, just like you spoke about what Puerto Rico means for New Yorkers, well, you can imagine New York is this idealistic city where we have all this history, and our revolutionaries and people came in the 19th century and steamship migration here. So it's this idealistic place, and New York is in the heart of Puerto Ricans, and therefore we continue to attract the intellectuals, the artists,
We all know that technically, that reality, Puerto Ricans who come to New York or Florida are not immigrants because they're American citizens. But to some extent, there's a little bit of an immigrant-like
dream or
image that I can make a better life for myself here.
Yeah.
There's more opportunity here, et cetera.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We share a lot with the Latin American countries, and their exodus and migrants. Originally we were primarily Spanish-speaking. Nowadays, I have to tell you, with all the Catholic churches, schools in Puerto Rico, and the cable TV, my grandson is completely bilingual. He can go one way or the other. So I think that's changing. And with 2/3 of the Puerto Rican population, 5.5 billion in the state, and about 3.4 in Puerto Rico, you can see that the balance, majority of people in Puerto Ricans in the U.S. are U.S. born.
Right.
First language is English. So the way we think about Puerto Ricans has changed.
Right. Well, let me tell you a story. And going back a long time, when I was in the seminary here in New York and wanted to learn a little bit of Spanish, they wouldn't let me go to Puerto Rico because too many people spoke English.
Right.
So I actually went to Bogota, Colombia, because there wasn't as much English spoken there. So that's a little bit of a confirmation of what you're saying. If there were one kind of point that you'd like our listeners to know or keep in mind about either the current situation or the future, what would that be?
Well, I mean, at some point we will need to move from saving life and the immediate response, the kind donations from all, loving people in the world to Puerto Rico, to a policy conversation, and to moving forward, the United States' responsibilities towards Puerto Rico. We are American citizens. We need to be treated on equal terms as everybody else. For example, the media response to the storm in Puerto Rico was not quite comparable to what happened in Irma or Harvey, Texas and Florida. And it's now that the whole reality is starting to get into the consciousness of people. But we need to translate that into an actual action, you know, right, of making sure that Puerto Ricans are in Puerto Rico are assisted in this time of need. So I think that will be an ask for all the listeners that it's okay. We need the donations. We need the in-kind donations, all the things that are being sent to Puerto Rico. But we need to, shoulder to shoulder, make sure that Puerto Rico receives the support and aid that they need in this time.
Well, the one thing I'm going to say, on this show, we talk a lot about public policies, and Right. We have no problem saying that when a politician says something we don't like, we say that. When we say something we like, we don't like. We talked over the past election how there was so much bad rhetoric. There was so much things, and it was awful. So, but I have to tell you that I was really, really surprised and really positively surprised by the incredibly obvious
response,
policy, no, the policy opinion that the president uttered last night. Because I have to say, that's absolutely correct. Right. Part of the recovery of Puerto Rico needs to be dealing with the debt.
Right.
And because right now the debt, I believe the debt in Puerto Rico has exceeded 100% of the gross national product
for
that.
That's correct.
Well, you can't do the recovery unless you figure out the answer to that question. That it got raised,
yes.
And I'm not a big fan of many of the vocabulary and the way that this president talks about things, because I don't think at times it's very respectful. But sometimes the directness of saying to the people on Wall Street, it means you got to deal with it.
Right.
Sometimes, I think it was good that was introduced.
Yes, yes.
You know, it doesn't solve it, but at least it's on the table.
And by the way, that's a point that a broad coalition of Puerto Rican leaders are asking, that, you know, remember that PROMESA was in part for the restructuring of the debt.
And we have about 30 seconds.
And we have to thank Jubilee USA, a coalition of Catholic and other faith-based communities that have supported Puerto Rico in that process wholeheartedly.
Professor Melendez, Hunter College, thank you for being with us. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.